Hello, my name is Michael Leibowitz, and I will be joined by Max Yu, who's one of my colleagues and from the Intel Corporation, as most of you already know. And we're going to talk about some of the performance improvements we've done related to I/O and bringing things off the disk on the first startup. I'm going to talk about the things I've done in relation to Configuration Manager, and Max is going to talk about the things he's done in relation to disk reordering. Really, we've taken two different approaches here, whereas in my approach, we've gotten our hands dirty with deep refactoring of a particular module, seeing if we can improve the I/O performance in a programmatic way, and then Max's approach, he's gone through and looked at if we can systematically affect a file system to get an improved disk performance. And he'll tell you all about that.
Could you turn on the microphone?
Yeah, maybe it would be better here. Thanks.
I'm familiar with such technology.
Is the battery dead?
I don't think so.
Is it turned on?
To where? It was. Sorry.
I think the battery may have expired. Okay, so I will shout. So the story with Config Manager is that Config Manager goes through all of the XCU files several times on startup, and it has a cache, but in order to check if the cache is live, it goes through all of these XCU files, all these XML files, and essentially stacks them. And a lot of these XML files are fairly small. Many of them are just a few hundred bytes. Some of them are reasonably large. All right. Some of them are reasonably large, up to about 12K. But going through all these on the disk takes just about forever. And by forever, I mean about 750 to 800 milliseconds. And when these files, if you look at them, they're mapped into a namespace like org, OpenOffice, system, blah, and that's by directory. So you actually have to traverse these directory trees, and going through this on the disk, based on the way the file system is laid out, can be somewhat expensive. And so we thought, what we'll do is we'll see if combining all of these files into one relatively large file would be more beneficial. And in fact, I have actually in the slide just ahead of this, I have a graphic picture that I've stolen from last year's OOCon, where here you can see these are calls to LSTAT, and then this is actually a call graph, and you can't see all of the 60 to 80 levels of stack trace here. And these are all files that have been statted more than once, usually 12 times or so on the startup map. And so we thought, aha, this is indicative of a real problem. Now, of course, when you hit LSTAT many times in a row for the same file, it's not like you're going to disk again. You are hitting the buffer cache, but you do have that system call overhead, and as well as however many pathways that you got to go through to in order to get to LSTAT. And a lot of it, in terms of Config Manager, has to do with OSL resolve path to make sure that you're getting out relative relative path of dots.
Okay, so it's not me that's defective, it's the microphone. So
we did several experiments to see if combining this I.O. into one single blob would actually improve things. And so we did our first set of experiments when we combined all the XEU files into a RAM disk and profiled the start, and then we did a gross hack where we crammed out everything, we turned everything in const and crammed them into the shared library and just indexed into an array with a hash. And then we did a hack where we made a database, a Berkeley database, that had the file name was the key and then the XML file was the data. And all of this showed that it looked like you'd get about 1 second of startup improvement going through and changing the access from searching these individual files to searching through some sort of blob. And so what we did is we made a new backend. Config Manager has these several different backends that they can use for it can use for data sources. Local BE, the local backend, which is I think prevalent. Perhaps 99.9% of installations is the most common, where it splits everything up into these XML files. And then there's also the LDAP backend, and then there's the system integration backend, which is able to pull keys from gconf and I think the Windows registry. And then I assume the Star Office has some value add backends that I don't know about. Maybe no one's saying. So we made a new backend called the database backend, DBBE, and it's in my CWS config DBBE, and as Stefan has pointed out, that it has some problem is yet to be figured out on Solaris, but soon that will be fixed, and then it will go upstream, and everyone will be happy. It won't be the default, but there's a little utility you can run that will enable it as a default and import all of the XML files. And to make this as easy as possible, I made the XML files is actually the XML contents is actually the data that is stored in the database. So similar to the hackish approach of just storing the file into a database, I'm storing the contents of the file plus a little bit of metadata. Relating to the directory hierarchy and translating that into the config space of layers and composite layers of specifying who's a child of whom and if there are sub layers, etc. But it was very very much an adventure to do this because my first step was to go to the developer's guide and read the developer's guide. I believe that's chapter 5 for Config Manager. And at the very end, there's about three sentences that's a how to add your own backend, and it says, well, you just have to implement the backend service and maybe the single backend service. Okay, great. Went to the API reference. And it turns out that that's not actually correct anymore. And Jörg and Stefan have been very helpful to me, sort of meandering through the combination of the API being not as the API documentation not being quite as helpful as perhaps I needed, and the incredibly generic terminology of Config Manager between layers and composite layers and stratums and how these things relate to each other, which is, if you just look at the API references, is only vaguely clear. But I spent like a long bit of time making guesses and then having my guesses corrected by Jörg and Stefan about the way things ought to behave in terms of giving back layers and stratums back to Config Manager. But I was able to eventually get it all in there. And I more or less copy the implementation style of local backend including leveraging some of their coding, where we have two databases. You end up with one database in the, well, I'm not familiar with exactly where Windows puts it, but you know, there's one database in user that is readable by everyone and writable only by root, and then there's one database in your home directory. And so the database in the in user is about 2.2 megabytes, and then the database in your home directory, I think, is about 26 kilobytes. And it turns out that the difference between you know, just sucking these things off the disk, if you were to just eagerly load them, if you eagerly load all the XML files, you are hard-pressed to beat 750 milliseconds without doing any processing. And then with the database, you can pretty much get all the data off of the disk in 80 milliseconds, at least on a desktop. So I was very excited about that, but I wasn't quite aware when I started this about how much how difficult it would be to actually get this fully changed in the code. And so this is the results of my first start profiling on, I think this is using OOBuild, and I think it's on SUSE 10. I had a lot of trouble profiling it on Windows. I had to do it manually because I couldn't get the Windows one to reliably script, probably because I don't know what I'm doing with Windows. But this is, I forgot how many starts this is. I think this is 150 starts, I think this is the median time, I believe, of 150 starts for each application. And the biggest win here is with Writer, which is conveniently the most used application. And you can, I don't know if you can read that, but you can almost chop 1.5 seconds off of your startup. And then on second start, of course, the win is much less pronounced, but you don't take a significant step backwards, I'm glad to report. Soon, very soon, after with a little bit of help from Stefan, we will have this hopefully integrated. And with that, I'd like to turn it over here to my colleague Max, who will tell you about our systemic changing in discrete.
The second approach of speeding open office is to reorder the disk blocks. And the diagram shows that start of the open office writer. Typical application starting with scattered disk accesses, it will cause a single penalty. Application will, when application starts, code and the configuration files will be read from disk. And warm start will also access disk. There are configure files to be read into memory and also carried forward to read from the disk. After the reorder of the file system, the theoretical speed up can be about 1.5 times or 3 times. Our goal is to identify and exploit access patterns. We gathered and analyzed the traces for typical starts, and we found the sequence of block accesses. After calculating, we adjusted the file system for the optimized block order. Here is the workflow of our software. First, we can see from the it contains two parts. The part in above is to run in the lab, and the part below is run on the user's computer. First, we run workload on a system and get the trace file by our disk tracer. After that, we use the K5 mapper to map the trace file into a key file. The trace file will contain the factors accessed when our application is starting. And the key file will map the factor number into block number in file system, and then map the block number into the file name and offset a block belongs. Then we generated the key file in the lab. We can deliver the key file to the end user. And in end user computer, we can use a key file mapper to map the key file back into the trace file. Then we use an analysis tool to calculate how to move the blocks on the partition. And then we may make a block move map contains pairs of source block and destination block. We input the move map into the block move ending, and then the block move ending will move the blocks in the partition. So the software will contain four main parts about tracing, that is better the trace file, the key file generation, which is to map the trace file into key file, and the analysis, that is to know how to reorder or how to move the blocks. And the last step is to move the blocks on the disk. Here are some design notions. For the tracing, we use a kernel patch called the disk trace buffer. It can trace for IDE and SCSI disk and record what sectors has been accessed during application start. And about the key file generation, there are two directions. One is to map the block to the file name and offset. And the other is to map the file name and offset part into the block number. In this case, we need to mapping the IO number to file name. And this should be do very quickly, so we just build a array in the memory and to show which node belongs to each file name. The other thing to consider is about the accuracy, because we log the sequence in the unit. And that may contain some noises, because the other applications may access this also. So after we get the key file, we can cut off the noisy part. The third part is the analysis. It's to know how to move the blocks. It is a kind of troubling system problem. And we can resolve it by a kind of macro model. We will talk about it in the next slide. The last part is the move ending. The move ending is related to file system. And Intel has implemented the move ending for Windows and Linux. On Windows, we have the move ending for FAT32 and NTFS. And on Linux, we have implemented the move ending for EIP2 and EIP3. When we move the blocks in a partition, we must be considered not to corrupt the files, but that we need to keep the print information in a table. Because the original file system do not only contains the pointers from the parent block to the child block. We must find out what the parent block is for a child block and to save it in the table. Then we can update the point table and update the related blocks when we move the blocks. Our tool in the Linux on Linux is a tool working in the user space. So we must unmount the partition before the blocks, so that we can have two options. One is to use a LabCD to boot the computer and to rewire the partition. The other one is to we can invite the move engine and the move block to map into init RD and to rewire the partition, boot partition before mounting. Another thing is to we must keep the integrity when we move the block. In case of a power fails, we must keep the data do not corrupt. So that we got the we can disable the system cache. We can do this by specifying a parameter in the open core. And now we will talk about a little more about the Markov optimization algorithm. First, we can generate a Markov representation of traces into a Markov diagram. Each node in the Markov model is one block in the archetype sequence, and each arc represents a transition. If there are various transitions from two nodes, we can use a weight to represent it. Then we can prune the Markov model based on the disk behavior. For example, if the access pattern is one block one to block seven, and block 127, we can trimming the X, and after that it leaves 127. Because we can take consider of the prefetch. And if there are two access patterns, 1275 and 1345, it can be turned into a single one that is 127345. Also, we can pull dead end nodes into longer chains. After that, the result is contains a lot of long strings of different sizes, and each string only contains one. The block will appear only in one string. Then we can map the access sequence disk regions. We put the longest strings first, and put them alternately on the disk regions in the top and low end. In this way, we can consider system characteristics and resolve the shared access applications. Here's the usage model. We have several kinds of usage models. One is to have it as a user invoked utility. We can use LabCD or initRD to put the system and reward the partition. And we can also have two options. One is to trace on the user end, the other to use the key file. We can do this for various applications. One example is using it as the source explore utility of OpenOffice. We can deliver key files with OpenOffice and reward the partition after it's stored OpenOffice. Another solution is to use it as a OS capability. We can select several kinds of frequently used applications on a Linux distribution, and then we can get key files for them and optimize them on user computers. Some results. This map shows the disaccess patterns when the red letter starting. It's only part of the start pattern. You can see that there are a lot of scattered dots on the screen. And after optimization, there are more lines. The lines indicating that the sequence access. And here is the disk seed distance for letter starting before and after optimization. Before optimization, there are only less than 50% of reading are in sequence. the after optimization, there are more than 80%. And also, there are less access in the scattered way after optimization. Here is the performance data. The second column shows the speed up times after optimization. And the third column shows how much percent reduced after optimization. In IO boost, that the IO time reduced after optimization. And also, here is the average time six. From this, we can see that about 50% of time of IO time can be saved after optimization. And there is also context results for Firefox and the GNOME. The GNOME can speed up by 6 seconds. In summary, in this presentation, we implemented the two speed up approaches. One is the config manager, the other is the disk reordering. Config manager can provide 1 to 2 seconds time decrease and 10% improvement. While disk reordering can provide 3 seconds and up to 40% faster. These two approaches can be used together and to reward the open office and to such as to using the config manager. Next steps. We can make this as a utility available to end users. Another thing that we can support for more file systems, including the CRFS. Okay. Now, if there are any questions for me and Michael?
Okay. So, if I understood the utility correctly, what you basically do is you don't change the program itself. So, you don't change OpenOffice, you reorder the business data.
Yeah.
Data you get from the utility. How long does the reordering take?
The reordering will contain several parts. We can see that one part is to convert the key file into the print file. It will take about 2 minutes. The other part is to reorder the disk blocks. It will take about 3 to 4 minutes.
How safe?
If we turn on turn off the file system to cache, it will not grab the data. So it will be very safe.
Okay. Also, did I understand correctly that you need to boot from a read-only CD and then mount the partition? Afterwards, so do you have a CD, a bootable CD, the user could just set plop into the disk drive, have the optimizations run, and then boot up the normal system?
Yes, this is one of the options. Now we can use the canonical LCD for booting. And the other option is that we can use the embedded tool and the into the user ID.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Okay. Is there any way of maybe getting those writes into a normal session? So I guess the reason is there's no API to write those files sequentially to disk, is it? It just seems it's quite a lot to do to expect the user to reboot.
Oh, you mean that the report takes a lot of effort, right?
Yes. Is there any alternative to having to put it in the InetRD or boot into a live CD?
I think another option is to use a kernel module to do the block move.
Right.
Yeah. any more questions also for Michael? Okay.
Assuming I would be a user which wants to use the DB backend, how would I do that? And is it possible to convert an already existing configuration?
Yes. So there's a utility, a shell script on Linux and Unix-like systems, and then a Python script on Windows systems called dbb enable, and it actually takes the local backend data store as its source, and then it imports that into the database, and then it rewrites config manager and the INI config manager for C on Linux, and then it's enabled. And I don't have an export utility, so I assume that you're going to like it and not turn it off. But there's actually a command line utility that can import and export keys. So if you decide that you don't like it, invoke the command appropriately and switch back to it.
So if the user just wants to convert its user configuration, then just start the script and
yeah.
Has the new record.
And then it goes, yeah.
One of the advantages of a XML5 for configuration data is that it's human readable. If you put it into a database, you will get something like a register. It's a binary format. So first, you cannot modify it with a simple text editor, and second, you risk corruption, like you get the Microsoft Windows registry.
Well, yes. however, the bulk of the configuration data is in the shared part. For the most part, it's read-only access, unless you run a super user. So corruption is not much of a problem. And in terms of it being human readable or human editable, you're correct. So the best thing you can do is you can use the utility to export individual keys, and they come back out as XML files because they're stored as the XML files.
It's like using the Windows registry editor.
No, I mean it's slightly different because the Windows registry has its own data schema, and the way it's encapsulating the data is specific to the implementation of the Windows registry. With the database backend, you're taking the XML file essentially, putting it into a container. Of course, you're welcome to use the APIs the config manager provides for manipulating the config data, which, you know, if you want to do it programmatically, is probably a better way of going about it, where you can, you know, update layer and have it write appropriately.
But these concerns are exactly the reasons why it is optional.
Yes, it is optional to switch it.
What about starting the XML files and reading them in if they've changed?
Well, I mean, when you have a 400 byte file, the stat is
just
as expensive as
true.
Going out. And, I mean, it's not reading the files themselves that's so expensive. It's actually finding them.
Yeah.
That's the expensive part. All right, well, thank you very much.